man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the PBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amrao. I'm joined in studio this week by my colleagues here at the Sunday Times Politics Desk, Kwanita Hunter, Zimasa Matiwane, and Apiwe de Klerk. How are you guys doing today?
Good, what's up?
Well, we've got a lot to talk about this week, so please stay with us. To all of you who are listening, we're going to be talking about Shlaudi Motsoeneng and his appearance before the state capture inquiry, and we're also going to be talking about the sort of xenophobic unrest and how politicians have been responding to that and whether those responses are actually good enough. So let's get straight into it, guys. Yo, Shlaudi has been quite a spectacle at the state capture inquiry. I've been covering it, and man, that guy never ceases to amaze me for so many reasons. I just never seen somebody who is so self-confident, if that's the right word to use, or just purely narcissistic. But for the first time, I think for whoever's been to the state capture inquiry and have been confronted with this question of the Guptas, and they've always sort of like just been a bit edgy, tried to place their words very well, sort of get out of it and explain the situation. Whereas Shlaudi, on the other hand, he was very, very unapologetic about his relationship with the Gupta brothers. And he said he visited the family's Sachsenwald home so many times that he couldn't even put a number to it, and that he enjoyed the curry so much that was served there. Yo, guys, this curry has been a very big focal point of the state capture inquiry.
But some people say the curry wasn't nice, you guys. Kanti, what is the verdict on the curry, Kwanita?
I feel like
it's very loaded. But the time that I did eat Gupta curry, it was not the best curry I've ever had.
I think it depends which curry I used to. Maybe it's Shlaudi is not at that level of Kanita yet.
I feel like the state capture inquiry needs to subpoena the chef who was working in Sachsenwald and ask him what was so good about testing.
Imagine Judge Dondo eating that curry. Yeah. I think it's a very good curry.
Because this thing was hypnotic. It seems like this curry had drawn people to Sachsenwald and made them and influenced their decisions. We're just joking, guys, but Shlaudi was his testimony was, and it's still going on, but he was responding to testimony from former SABC CEO Lulama Mokobo, and she previously told the commission that Motsoeneng unexpectedly hurried her away from a desk, and this was about a week into her tenure in 2012, to take her to the Gupta's house. And at the house, Ajay Gupta was there, Atul Gupta was there, and Duduzane Zuma, and Ismakashule's son, Chipitso. Now, apparently, at the house, they lobbied her to allow them access to the SABC digital channels. Now, what's fascinating here about Shlaudi is that he doesn't deny it. He says, of course he did. He took her to the house, they're normal business people, and they pitched an idea, and so what? But that's the question, is, and this is a big argument in South Africa right now, around the Guptas, is meeting the Guptas legal, or is it just ethically what? Shlaudi sort of brought this up. He's like, so what? They're normal businessmen, so what if we met them? But is there a problem with that question?
Can I jump in? Look, I don't have a problem with any COO, group CEO of a state-owned company, of a parastatal, or any who was meeting with a businessman. Mm. I have a problem with the fact that they are not the only ones who had some sort of an interest in the SABC or some sort of partnership. Mm. So the SABC is a multi-billion organization. You now taking the CEO, or you are the COO, you go to their house. How many other people do business with the SABC? Mm. Do you then go to each of those people's house? So it shows you the problem with it. That's my problem with it. If the Guptas had rocked up at the SABC and had a scheduled meeting or a formal meeting, that's not a problem. So long as the SABC doesn't agree to a dodgy deal.
Of course.
You see, it's the summoning that makes us uncomfortable.
You are being summoned. You know? I mean, come on. And there are a lot of others. I mean, say, for instance, people who produce content like the Fergusons, for instance. Do you have a picture in your mind, the group CEO of the SABC going to meet with Connie Ferguson and his and her husband at their house to discuss a pitching of a show? You see, that's where the problem is. They're being summoned. It's not just a routine normal meeting.
And that's where
there is no problem. That there is a businessman or business people who have so much power that they can summon a CEO to come and listen to them and feed them the curry then. And
but can I tell you guys something, right? So I mean, it's no secret that I obviously worked at the Guptas around that time, right?
And you did indulge in the curry?
No, I did. Even on my slave wage. You know, I would often go to these breakfast briefings, right? And they would be tremendously boring, number one, right? You're getting a minister talking about an yearly plan that she doesn't even know about herself. You had, what is this guy, Peter Ndoro.
You said herself, you have a specific minister in mind, who is it?
Tina. That day I was sugar.
Tina Choba Peterson for the people who don't know.
But then you also, I mean, nobody used to buy those tickets, right? It used to be a whole lot of SAA staff members that used to sit on tables. It used to be state-owned entities buying these tables, right? And it was not, I mean, really...
And they weren't cheap.
They were not cheap, right? And the Guptas would benefit all of that money, right? They had free advertising because they never paid the SABC for that content. And it doesn't, for me, what I couldn't understand is that the SABC can get a minister to talk about the plan any day of the week, right? And these breakfast briefings, I mean, we know the Treasury has done an investigation, was that not only was it, you know, illegal, it was also used by the Guptas to strong arm or to make contacts and influence, right? Because back in 2012 and 2013, if you follow the evidence that's coming out before the Zondo Commission, is that they never really had the muscle that now we know they had, right?
Of course.
So they used these kinds of platforms to strong-arm people, you know, give people publicity, invite people to their shows. You understand, so that they could then get a footing, and then get access to people like Lynn Brown and Tina Joma Peterson and all of those kind of people. But the reality of it is that this what Claudia is admitting today is like what Zuma admitted about the New Age to say no, it was my idea. So basically, for me, if I was Zondo and the investigators or Terence Rombembe, I would have said, this is an admission to state capture. This is an admission to say, yes, I was in the state. Yes, I worked for a state entity. And I prioritized doing business that was not favorable to my institution, but favorable to a private entity. So that is, for me, admitting to state
capture. But in Slaudi's mind, as he said it, it was favorable to the SABC because apparently it had boosted their show's ratings. But we'll get back to that some other time. Because apparently these things had cost the SABC millions to broadcast and they got no money back from it. But Slaudi apparently believes that actually...
Based on what?
Based on, I don't know what Slaudi based on. But anyway, back to some more of his claims here. Right now, he was responding to a lot of what previous witnesses of the SABC had said about his controversial policy. Now, one of them was his sort of 90-10 division of local and international content, where he would give sort of priority to 90% of local content and 10% to foreign content. The other thing he was made to respond about was his other policy or decision that, as he describes it, of banning the broadcasting of protest action. Now, this was, now the time here is important, because it was around the 2014 national elections where he then said, no, actually, we're not going to broadcast any violent protest actions. And lots of people saw that as a way of not showing people's sort of dissatisfaction with the ANC at the time. So he was made to respond to some of these things over the past day, and he claimed it was his job to stop the broadcast of violent protests. It's one of his decisions that were really taken aback by some of the SABC 8, those senior managers who were fired because they openly defied him. And on the local content policy, he basically said that it was praised throughout the country, and his intervention to stop the broadcast of violent protests was necessary to promote social cohesion, and it did not go against the Broadcasting Act. It also said that, but also the thing is that his policy is said to have cost the broadcaster millions in advertising revenue. So Shaori believes that he's done nothing wrong here.
In terms of the 90% policy, it for me it makes sense why a South African national broadcaster would prioritize South African content. It has many benefits for our artists in terms of making a living, in terms of royalties, but also in terms of preserving our languages, job creation, I mean, production, people who are acting, a lot of people in the arts industry who are struggling to make a living are struggling because we are busy prioritizing Bold and the Beautiful and Van Damme to play on SABC since 1990, you know, or 80 something. So for me, that made sense. I think maybe we could have started with the 60-40 and see how it works. I'm still not sure how the advertisers came to a decision that...
Well, obviously, it's because people stopped watching shows.
No.
No, that's not the way. Can I just jump in 1 second? For me, the issue is never the 90-10 or the localization of content. You cannot have one man unilaterally decide. That's the problem. The problem is it's a public broadcaster. Yeah. It needed to go through a proper channel of saying getting the public views, like any state entity, and you filter it all the way up until it's policy, and then you say this is the policy.
Okay.
The risks are mitigated. You spoke to your advertisers. Now, according to advertisers, that's instability. One man coming into a meeting and says, guys, and you know the accounts of how that meeting took place. It was bizarre, you know, just deciding there and then, Dan, we are not going to be playing all of these things. You're not going to, straight away, we're going to do a 90-10, and if you don't, we're going to fire you all. That is the problem. The problem is not the actual idea. The idea is a good idea, and probably the public would have said the same thing. It's, if you're an advertiser, you have made your calculation in the fact that, okay, 80,000 people watch Bold and Beautiful. I'm just using that as an example. So I know that this... you understand what I'm saying? Any instability to that is going to make me scared. And the reality of it is that...
because you're not sure what the response is going to be if you remove that. Okay,
yes, but if you did it according to
process.
A process, and there was proper consideration, talking to advertisers, talking... and like he said, because consulting the Guptas, he could have gone and consulted the public.
Look, I was one of the biggest advocates for that, amongst my friends, of course. Some of them see themselves as artists, and they want their mixtapes and their songs played on radio. Yeah, I've got
important friends.
I'm friends with DJs. So I was the biggest advocate of that. To say, look, for me, it doesn't make sense to me that I listen to a station and 90% of what is playing is foreign music. Some of them, I'm sorry to say it, but it's crap.
I'm
listening to Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
I mean, we can listen. There are crappy artists of ours here in South Africa
that we can listen to.
I mean, put Steve Hofmeyer in there for all I say. But what I'm saying is, you look now on DSTV, we have channels that are focused on local content, and it's people who were at the time at the SABC. I'll use the example of the Fergusons again. They've got shows there, they've got drama series and whatnot. top quality. Mm. Now, had that decision been made properly and been put into effect, those channels would not even be competition for SABC.
Yeah.
A lot of people who have access to DSTV, they get that package and they would much rather watch those channels than they do SABC. Mm. So SABC loses because they saw Saudi's idea. As soon as they saw that idea, it clicked on them. Let's create these channels. There are those, some of like the worst quality productions, but they put them there because they know someone's going to produce this series now or this short story movie or whatever. Mm. Now, the second one, by the time they get to the fifth one, the quality would have improved, and then they graduated to a different channel which has premium stuff. So his idea was brilliant. Mm.
So let's talk about Slaudi's other decision, and that's his ban on violent protests. And he was saying that banning the violent protests is a form of promoting social cohesion. And he said that look at these xenophobic attacks happening outside in Johannesburg now. It's because we've been showing these protests, and the investors are they are in anticipation for the country because we show these protests, and we shouldn't be doing that because we're, and in his words, we're glamorizing violence. He's trying to say glamorizing, but he uses the word glamorizing violence. So that's Slaudi's sort
Stop
of...
Stop it, I like it.
Glamorizing. Trademarked by Slaudi. I'm sorry you can't use it. Apiwe, what do you think?
Look, there's a very thin line between someone who has... whose heart is in a good place and censoring. But on the... how this was triggered, it was not necessarily out of a good heart. It was more so to protect the ruling party at the time. If he has been like that, look, I get the fact that when people read about things, when people see it on the news that in Gauteng they were protesting about the road that has potholes and they bent down a clinic. Then the minister came 2 months later, construction has started and they rebuilt the clinic. It might send the wrong message, right? But you have to draw the line between that and censoring. And he, at the time, it was really for the interest of the ANC and his buddies who were in charge at the time. It had nothing to do with him. And I saw the idea that he was making, that you are banning a library and then someone is coming out of the library and you know they are on fire and stuff like that, but he never gave other examples like what graphic images or footages that he was so concerned about. Because when you're going to cover a protest, you're going to say there's a protest, people want to see, okay, there's a protest where
exactly,
so, and it's violence and people are throwing stones at the police. So where do you draw the line? Okay, don't show them when they are throwing stones at the police, or maybe only show them when they are singing then say later that so much was damaged. I mean, I don't get his logic.
So you must have rounded up for us.
I know for a fact that I don't want Saudi making a decision for me on what I consume as news and what I don't consume as news. So he definitely overstepped there. It wasn't his place to make that decision. And the fact that, look, the SABC will always be a highly politicized space, but you need someone there who is strong and independent, and Saudi has never been strong and independent. He's there because so-and-so put him there for a certain mission, and he was doing a disservice to South Africa when it comes to that.
We're going to take a very quick break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about xenophobic violence throughout South Africa and how politicians are responding to it. Stay tuned.
Racial identity politics, a phrase that has the potential to start an argument in just about any situation. That's why we're starting it first. Let's Start an Argument is a unique and insightful podcast series about the meaning of race to us today. Presented by researchers Cecilia Koch and Doctor of Philosophy Jason Werbeloff, the series aims to spark rational argument and meaningful discussion around this controversial topic. Find Let's Start an Argument now on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Okay, welcome back. So let's get straight into it. A whole bunch of politicians and political parties have been responding to how they think that the xenophobic situation in South Africa should be managed. It started off with Minister for International Relations and Cooperation, Minister Naledi Pandor, on Monday when she met ambassadors and high commissioners from Africa to sort of ease the tension after diplomatic fallout triggered between all the violence that we've seen in Johannesburg and other major cities. From that violence, 10 people have, 12 people have been killed so far, apparently, according to Police Minister Bheki Cele. But 10 of them are South Africans, and more than 700 people have been arrested. But it's caused a lot of outrage throughout various African countries, especially Nigeria. We've seen on Wednesday that a lot of Nigerians have been going back home. They were offered free flights to go back home if they chose to do so. Now, the way politicians have been responding to this is actually quite interesting. Pandor, on the one hand, told diplomats that the legacy of apartheid, which caused economic inequality in the country, was to blame for the attacks on Africans by local South Africans, among other things, of course. But let me quote her here. She says, "While political and civil freedom soothed the wounds of apartheid, the long-term and worsening economic inequality has deepened resentment and caused antipathy toward brothers and sisters from other African countries. And it is this anger and antipathy that we have to confront." Now, this came in from slack from various, this received some slack from various sectors of society, saying that, oh, here we go, we're blaming apartheid again. That's what some people said, I saw it on social media. Then the ANC came out shortly after that, saying that they're calling on governments, justice, peace and security cluster to establish the immediate causes of the violence and identify those who were involved in fueling it. So Pandor is blaming apartheid. The ANC is saying, well, we need to find the reasons for this. Bheki Cele says he has a plan, but he can't tell it to us. Well, that's understandable. But can we actually take it on faith that they have a plan, the police this is? And then the DA, basically Musi Maimane earlier this week said that they need better policing, that they need to deploy an emergency budget to deal with the outbreak of xenophobic violence in Gauteng. They need to immediately increase the number of police, public order policing and the public order policing unit. They need to increase the number of police reservists and have better cooperation with crime intelligence. So some practical stuff from the DA. Don't know whether it's going to work or not, but at least there's some solutions there. So, guys, where do we start? Is what the politicians saying, or these politicians, I know Julius Malema said some things as well, EFF leader. Let's get into that. Are they presenting any ideas, or is it a whole bunch of rhetoric around this?
Can I start with the last guy that you spoke about?
Go for it.
And then you said he's presenting practical
Is it not practical?
Solution. The most practical thing the guy should have done, we've been saying since 2016 when they put in Mayor Mashaba there, the mayor of the city of Joburg, tell the guy to stop talking about this thing.
Yeah.
He must just stop talking about immigration.
Ban him completely. Talking about him.
Tell him. I mean, it's his statements that are fueling this thing. The other plans, they just... No, man. I was there when he was addressing.
Yeah.
And the one thing he didn't say is that we are going to talk to Mayor Mashaba to say he must tone it down. Every time the Mayor Mashaba gets an opportunity to speak in public where there is something wrong that is attributed to his government,
He blames
foreigners.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah. So why don't you tell the mayor, say, Mayor Mashaba, please, can you just, we are dealing with home affairs. Secondly, he's like the ANC, his party, during the campaign period, they campaigned hard on the issue of undocumented foreigners.
And the biggest... And the poorest borders.
And the poorest borders. Mm. And the biggest... If you've lived in Joburg, or if you had followed the xenophobic violence and between 2008-2009, you would have known that the hot spots were here in Gauteng, in Johannesburg, and if you followed researches and what, you would know the attitude of the citizens of Gauteng, of Johannesburg, towards foreigners. Now you have a mayor whose statements every time they seem to justify the attitude, the xenophobic attites of normal citizens. So when they go to the CBD, and start saying these ones are the cause of crime, are the cause of hijacked buildings and every single wrong that is happening in this city. Mm. And then you are saying this to people who already believe that foreigners shouldn't be here. That is the cause of these outbursts. And it's not a coincidence that it's happening just a few months after the elections, because the whole time of elections they were being fed that message, including by the ANC, including the premier of Gauteng here. Mm. So you can't then feed people that information and then expect them in their frustration, because right after elections they didn't sort those problems out that the people were having. Mm. They didn't. So their frustrations, they boil over, they start attacking people. And when they are attacking foreign nationals, they don't ask, are you documented?
Yeah.
Are you not documented? Mm. Mm. They feel that politicians agree with them that one of our main problems is undocumented foreigners. In their minds is that these foreigners. Mm. And they start beating them up and start banning them. Musima Imane can't tell me that he's bringing a solution to this thing. Anyway, I'm very emotional about it. It's one of the most unnecessary points you use to campaign in a country like South Africa.
Mm. Of course.
But you see, the thing is, right, when I look at this violence that's happening, I believe that there can be many versions of, there can be many truths, there can be many things coexisting at the same time. Naledi Pando can be right to say this is a consequence of apartheid, because yes, we have people living in hostels, we have, you understand, so she can be right. At the same time, the president can be right in saying that, you know, maybe it's an over-exaggeration of the concept of xenophobia, because 12 people died and 10 are South Africans, right? I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying you can have this multiplicity of voices, but what you can't have is you can't have real crime happening in such large amounts of numbers, and our security agencies are playing cat and mouse. Mm. You know, that for me is the bigger problem. When the defense minister sits on TV and says, no, we don't know what's behind this violence, we don't know why, you understand, that for me is a bigger problem, because this country can go to shit and our security agencies are busy fighting with each other. That for me is a bigger problem. You can have people who are xenophobic, right, because you can't stop people of having certain views and you can't stop people from mobilizing, but what you can do is preemptively avoid violence and loss of life and loss of property. So that for me is more important than all of these multiplicity of views and is it xenophobia, is it not xenophobia. Yes, we have a, you know, Nigeria exaggerated the problem, and that's true. Nigeria exaggerated it, and the thing is, when we as South Africans are very critical about our government, but elsewhere in Africa the media is not critical of their government. So when we say South Africa is xenophobic and, you know, we're becoming a pariah state, which I agree with, right? I'm not saying we're not xenophobic. It feeds into the narrative of strongman dictatorships or strongman leaderships across the continent who are saying, yeah, Africa is, you understand, and then you can't have, because there's violence, you can't have a mature discussion to say, okay, we have to talk about the fact that there's no economic opportunity has been stifled in South Africa, and therefore people are becoming xenophobic on one hand, and on the other hand there needs to be an equal conversation about criminality by Nigerians or whatever, you understand what I'm saying?
Okay, you see, can I disturb you? I'm sorry for doing
no,
this.
No, it's fine.
My biggest problem, and this is something that was drummed on me by my lecturer, the guy who was a course coordinator, Jerry Liabel, is that crime is crime. Mm. It's not crime committed by foreign nationals. It's crime.
Yeah.
So the biggest problem that we've seen in South Africa is being perpetuated by political leaders. I understand police have to release statements. Mm. Foolishly, their communications department, they tell you 2 foreign nationals,
yeah,
5 Nigerians. Mm. And when you read to the crime, and when the politician speaks about the crime, there's nothing about them being Nigerians that caused them to commit the crime. Mm.
No.
So what I'm saying is, so because these people who are public officials,
yeah,
they go into public and say a Zimbabwean man stabbed and killed someone in a tavern over a fight that started because of a cigarette. The fact that they are Zimbabwean has got nothing to do with the fact that the guy stabbed the other.
But if you go in any country in the world, if you go in any country, you'll be treated differently if you are not if you're a foreigner that committed a crime.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is us, we are more responsible than that. We are in a country where there is xenophobic violence. We've seen it. We've seen people being burned alive.
Right.
So why do you... the only thing that... would justify you saying it was someone from Zimbabwe or someone from whichever country is if this crime they committed for the purposes of fleeing the country to the other country and it has direct link between them committing the crime and them fleeing back to their country. So we are not being sensible enough. It's like, okay, for instance, if it was back in the apartheid days, it would say a white woman has been stabbed by a black man.
No, it's not the same thing.
It's actually exactly the same thing.
But that's the thing of sovereignty of borders, because the reality of it is you can't have discussions about stretched out policing, right? I'm really not disagreeing with you on your point of the fueling of xenophobia part, but I'm just defending the point of saying when Makura says we can't fix Barra because Barra is overstretched because 70% of people that go to Barra are non-South Africans, non-tax, right? That is an important part in an economic scenario. It's an important part in socioeconomic problems that the country faces, is that the problem is you can't have Kenya pointing at you and saying, yeah, look, because they have refugee camps. That they have...
This is the point I disagree with politicians. You see, there's nothing that would take away from the fact that Barra has problems with overcrowding if Makura says we have a problem with overcrowding because Barra receives the large number of patients from in South Africa.
No, it's not the same thing, but these people don't pay tax.
No, Kanit. My problem is not that he's saying they're not paying tax or whatever. My problem is that in a South African, whenever a South African is queuing in Barra,
right,
in their minds is that the reason why I'm not being taken, I have to wait, is because these Zimbabweans are overcrowding our hospitals.
But are you saying that point that there's illegal foreigners in our hospitals, you think that's not an important point? I think that's an important point.
You know, it's an important point for you when you are planning inside the meetings.
Okay, yeah.
Not for you when you are addressing a rowdy crowd in the queue. He's standing in the queue.
Every time
you are fueling this violence, you are talking about it when it comes to Barra, you are talking about it when it comes to, say, the provisions of housing, because you've created a mindset that says, because the reason why there are so many informal settlements is because these foreigners are building shacks. So we can't build houses for these foreigners.
Mm.
And then when you build houses and the person who is a South African doesn't get a house, in their mind they think it's the foreigners who have taken over the houses. Therefore, let's attack them. When you are talking about crime, you're saying five Nigerians with drugs, and when it's a South African, you never say it.
Yeah.
You must say, if you are saying it for Nigerians, for Kenyans, you must say it for South Africans.
Yeah. No,
and in South Africa now, if that's the case, then you must go and say five white people, two black people, and then you will go down and say two Xhosas.
No, that's what Julius was actually saying.
And it's true. It's very true. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't change the situation. It doesn't change the fact that Barra, like the fact that he told us that the people who are overcrowding are foreigners. Has it changed the situation at Barra? No, it didn't. Had he not
hardens our attitudes towards foreign nationals.
So the way you are messaging is driving.
And I feel like it's deliberate with politicians.
So there's a scapegoat, maybe. No?
Yes. Because of the social issues that they don't have ideas of how to fix, right? So they shift the blame on these. We government are not the problem. The problem is that these people are streaming in here. And we have no plan for you because they are taking over. Now there's a perception when you're a South African that actually, I can't even live in Hillbrow because Hillbrow is Lagos now. It's not my country anymore. I don't even feel comfortable walking around Hillbrow. I don't feel like I belong in my own land because these people have taken over, you know. But you see, when it comes to the hostel dwellers, on Sunday, I live in Maboneng by GP. Fortunately or unfortunately, there's a hostel.
So you've been in direct contact.
I was taking a nap on a Sunday afternoon woke up. I live on the second floor and I woke up with a huge rock coming through the window, breaking the window and almost hitting me, sleeping inside my bed.
Are you serious?
I'm telling you, Com, that's what happened. And I woke up, went and checked the window, and there was this group of men. They were singing songs and they were, you know, carrying car tires as if they are ready to beat up people and bend. They were intimidating people. They were just smashing everything. And you know, I live next to a police station, right? GP police station. Not a single cop came out. Cops came out maybe 20 minutes after that crowd had passed and broke windows and trashed the whole area. I don't know where the cops were, but I don't think the cops know what to do. I saw them pulling two people and putting them in a van and then disappearing. They are next door to where I live, and that's what happened. I feel like when it comes to the hostels, our political leaders, they must not go there with an attitude of, you listen to us, you listen to what we are saying. I think people have had enough of promises, empty promises, and everything that politicians are known for. I think people need dialogue now. They need to be listened to, first of all, by Ramaphosa. Maybe Ramaphosa can even bring King Zwelithini. I don't know, because at least they respect him. They won't boo him. He can bring Gaile. But they need to sit down and listen to the people who are angry. What are the issues? How can we help? Because it's a culmination of years and years of anger that we see play out. And unfortunately, foreign nationals become victims because we know that politicians were campaigning on xenophobia. So instead of Gaile getting there and you know, standing on top of a van and addressing angry people, listen to the people. Listen to them.
And you know, if you really wanna like scapegoat foreign nationals, then strengthen your borders, strengthen your crime what you call it now, your criminal justice.
Can I remind you guys of something? When they were doing the so called cleanup there in around Carlton Center and they were confiscating these goods,
they're still doing it today in Fortsburg.
Do you guys remember that there were cops who took the goods and tried to resell them to the foreign nationals? That's how much we do not have any law enforcement. I don't think intelligence is going to prevent these things happening. I don't think the police are going to enforce the law. I don't think the politicians are going to stop campaigning and, you know, scapegoating with xenophobia. But I think we need a bigger dialogue.
Okay, let's do this very quickly around the table because we're running out of time. Practical solutions, guys. Any ideas? Very quickly around the table. Q?
Me, I'm not a public servant.
Our political leaders must stop being xenophobic.
Yeah, one. Yeah, I can agree with that.
Two, they must stop thinking they are going to address people. They must listen to people for once and hear what the people need. Three, the people who are in South Africa legally or illegally, they ran away from something. They are not going anywhere, Mchand. They are here to stay. Yeah. So we need to find a way to coexist with them and share the little that we have. At the end of the day, they are our African brothers. The people from Europe who stay in Sentin, we don't even know if they are here legally or illegal. No one is
asking
them.
Can't people buy 35 million rand parking lots in...
Yeah.
You saw that?
Oh, I think that's perfect.
Look, I heard the deputy minister of the state security, Zizi Kodwa, saying that they've identified some of the leaders of... I really hope that state security will now wake up. And because this thing now is no longer just about there's xenophobic violence in Gauteng, we must condemn it and whatnot. For them, politicians start acting when for them there are consequences. There are consequences now because our relations with these countries have broken down. This this whole face that we had been showing, that this is the kind of country we are, is starting to be shown as not true. It was very sad for me that South Africa, our national team, Bafana Bafana, not for the fact that I wanted to watch the soccer, but the significance of two countries playing a friendly match. A friendly match, unlike others, you are not forced by FIFA, the federation. Two countries pulling out. It shows that these people are not buying this nonsense that the politicians are selling.
But
they have problems, and when it's a very important thing internationally when you show solidarity, even if you do not have a single citizen who has experienced xenophobic violence in South Africa, to say we are taking a stand, it is wrong.
But also, you know, the one thing we can't discount is also geopolitics at play, and you know, in the kind of scramble to be the big don in Africa, by your Nigerias, your Rwandas, you understand that really we as South African media also have to understand that while our government can be wrong, other people can also be wrong.
Yeah. No, I get that, but you see, this is the argument I always make when there are service delivery protests that are led by politicians. You see, when there's nothing wrong, no one will join you in a protest.
Yeah.
If the streets are well tarred, the lights are there,
the
sewer is at, try and organize a protest in Sandton, you'll have a problem. But go to Soweto, even if your intentions, you know what you want to gain. The people who have wrongs will join you. So what I'm saying is, if South Africa had not wronged foreign nationals, the act of protesting against South Africa would not have gained traction, because you would go to Zambia to say, you must boycott a match with Bafana Bafana. They will ask you, what have they done?
I think that's all we have time for this week, unfortunately. I wish we could keep talking about this, but we've run out of time. Remember, if you want to advertise with us on this podcast, you can email smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Guys, thank you so much for joining me in studio today. It's been a really riveting conversation. I think this will be the one to remember as well in weeks to come. I think we're going to be talking about this again. I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon, unfortunately. But thank you all for listening in as well. We really appreciate the support, and we'll catch you again same time next week. Cheers.